tonight is anniversary night. The format of tonight's meeting will be a main speaker who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by our information break and the anniversary celebrants. Tonight, our main speaker is Sue.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sue. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much. I want to thank Randy for asking me to speak tonight. She's so kind and gave me a reminder call just and a text and gave me all the information I needed to know to get up here and speak tonight. And so she just asked me if I was the main speaker. I'm like, yes, and I feel like I'm going to throw up because I'm a little nervous. This was my home group, and I think I started coming here when I moved here in 2001, maybe. And then in 2006, I moved out. And but this is really where I got into my, just said speak into the microphone. I'm like, hello. And okay, so my statistics, my sobriety date is September 24th, 1998. And my sponsor is Kita, and she knows where I am because I called her on my way in. And I have a regular call-in time with her, and I can call her anytime during the week. And I just moved back to the East Coast in November, and so I'm getting a meeting schedule, and I think I'm about to get elected to a chair this Friday morning meeting, and I get to find speakers. So if you're ever out in Fairfield, Connecticut, please let me know. I'd love for you to come and speak. And I'm always working 10, 11, 12, and Kita and I are doing another fourth step now. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love this group, and I've made so many dear friends. And so many of the voices here of the longtime people who have gone to Atlantic Group ring in my head and have ring throughout my head throughout my sobriety. And okay, so my story. I'm obviously an alcoholic because I'm here, and that means I like to drink. And, you know, growing up, I was what they call in the big book. I had a nervous disposition, and I was fear-based from a very early age. I remember I was young. I was maybe like, I don't remember how old I was, but I was walking down the street with my mom, and I saw a police car in our neighborhood, and I was like, we need to turn around. Like, I didn't want to pass the police car, and I don't know why. Like, there was no reason for me to be nervous or scared of the police. Like, no, we never had police come to our house for, like, violence or anything, but it was like I saw the police car, and I was like, we need to go the other way. I mean, I made my mom walk the other way. And that's just how I was. I had these weird fears, and I was very nervous, and I was just scared all the time. Scared so I would almost, like, when I got older, I would physically get sick, and they kept trying to figure out what was wrong with me. Why was I getting sick, and I'd have to come home from school, and I was just that kid. I was just scared about everything. And so I get older, and my fears are getting bigger, and the obsessions are getting bigger, and you know, that head, like, you're not good enough. That chatter started in my head, you're not good enough. People don't like you. That girl wants to beat you up. She wants to beat you up. No one wants to beat me up. But that's what I say to myself. Like, she's going to be, I get sick, I have to go home. And my mom, like, did not know what to do. And I kept studying for my driver's ed test, and I failed it. And I started to hang around, like, kind of the bad group of people. Like, I would sneak out. I remember I snuck out of the house. My mom knew I snuck out. I continued to sneak out anyways, and I didn't come home till the next morning, and my parents are baffled, like, what do we do with this kid? And after I failed my driver's license test, she opened up the yellow pages in the phone book and found a psychiatrist and was like, here, what's wrong with her? And they diagnosed me, and they put me on medication, and it made me feel a little funny, right? It sedated me a little bit, and so I was like, I think I need a little more. Like, I think I need a little bit more, you know, so to the point I'm taking it like four times a day, and I must have heard somewhere that you may not sleep well on it. So I was like, I think I need a sleeping pill. I'm not sleeping that well, you know, so then I get a sleeping pill, and they give me something for my stomach because I'm fearful and nervous and I keep getting sick. And so now I'm just going through high school and I'm just like zombied out, right? But it stops the chatter. And But that only lasts so long for a girl like me. And everybody's drinking. And I started dating the guy who just got out of the psych ward. And he was on medication. And so he couldn't drink on his medication. And I couldn't drink on my medication. And we were like, I would go with him to his psychiatric appointments. And I'm sure he came with me to my psychiatric appointments. And we were like, oh, I'm like, I'll date you. I don't even know. And so that's just how I am. And so one night I wanted a drink and I called, there was a number and it was like 1-800-ASK-A-NURSE. So I called and I was like, because I wanted a drink, but I was too scared to drink on all the medication. And I already sound like I'm 42 and I already sound like I'm 20 right now. So I'm sure when I was like, whenever I called, I was 16 or whatever. I'm sure I sounded like I was 6 over the telephone. And so I'm like, I'm on this, this, and this. Do you think I can drink? Like, you know, because I wanted someone to tell me that I would be okay if I drank and I wouldn't die, because that was a fear, you know. And I'm not sure what she said. I'm sure she probably either told me no and hung up the phone or was like, you are crazy. You need more help than that. And but what happened is I started to drink, and I loved it. You know, it stopped that chatter again, but it was fun. I wasn't just sedated. And but it stopped that you're not good enough. They're only hanging out with you because they feel bad for you. You're ugly. You're fat. Like, it stopped all that. All that chatter and obsession and fear went away. And it was like, it talks about it in our big book, the ease and comfort that comes at once by the first drink. And that's how I felt. And it was like, oh, you know. And I wasn't a girl who drank I wasn't like the girl who drank one drink. From the get-go, I was the girl who drank to feel, to black out, right? To pass out, to not feel, to be numb. And it was fun. Like, it was fun in the beginning. I had a lot of fun. You know, I was funny and loud and, you know, everything I am today, but just drunk. And everything I think that I was scared to be, but I could do it when I was drinking. Cause then it would be like, well, I was drunk. That's why I said that. Oh, I was drunk. You know what I mean? And it worked for a while. And I went away to college, and that was great, you know, because you can always find somebody to drink with in college. You know, I drink with the people who drink on Wednesdays and drink with the people who drink on Friday and Saturday and then drink with the people who drink on Sunday. And, you know, you just kind of get lost and your parents aren't there. And it was really fun. And but what happened at the end of college is, you know, it stopped being fun. And I remember one night I was at the bar. And I was drinking with just, like, the college students. But I saw the people at the bar drinking, and I was like, I want to drink with those people because those people look like they're having fun. You know, and those were the guys that were sitting up at the bar. They knew the bartender. It was like they lived there. And those are the people I wanted to be with. You know, I was starting to cross that line where alcohol ceased to be a luxury. And I felt like that, you know, and so I must have given this guy my number, and he did what any good alcoholic does and called me at 1 a.m. or around there and asked me on a date. And I said, sure, of course I will. You're drunk and you're calling me in the middle of the night. I'd love to go on a date with you. And so we did, and we went out to dinner, and it was very civil, and then we went to the bar, and I drank at a bar called the Rhino Inn in Montana, and we went back there, and we got drunk. And, you know, after that, I just kept drinking all the time. You know, I went from, and it was very quick. They talk about in the big book that line we cross over, where alcohol is fun and it's good, and then we cross that line where alcohol, we need it, right? And I needed it. And I needed it, and it started to cause problems. Like, I wasn't showing up where I was supposed to be. I remember I got a B on a paper, like my end paper in college, and I was like, I'm either going to go to the bar and drink or I'm going to kill myself. It was like, that was my thinking. And so I went to the bar and drank. And, you know, and it progressively got worse. And that's what it talks about. It progressively got worse. I was no longer, you know, it seemed like it was fun, but it wasn't. The consequences were getting bigger, and I was blacking out. And, you know, it's just ending up in places like I shouldn't be ending up. And, you know, I was thinking a lot. I've been reading one of our AA books in the morning, and it talks a lot about the powerlessness. And One of my stories about the powerlessness is I was like, I'm not going to go out to drink tonight. Like, I had to work the next morning, and I'm like, I'm not going to drink tonight. But everybody was at my apartment, and I'm like, but I'm not going to drink. But everyone's drinking, and it's really hard for me not to drink. And so I'm like, I'm just going to drink here at home, right? I'm just going to have a couple here, but I won't go out. Right? Like, the bar always gets raised. And then they're all going to, now they're all like, we're going to go out to the bar. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go. I'm only going to have a couple. But that's it. And then I'm going to come home and go to bed. And then I get to the bar and I drink. And then I'm drunk and I'm like, new game! Every bar we pass to get to the bar we're getting to, we're going to take a shot. You know, and that's where it went from I'm not going to drink to here, I've got a game for us. We're going to take a shot at every bar we pass before we get to the one we want to get to. And that's how I'm powerless. Like, I can't say no to it. You know, I can't say no. When it's in the, my life becomes unmanageable because I get drunk, I pass out, and I didn't get up in time for work, and I'm scrambling to get ready, and I reverse fast out of my driveway, and I think, like, on my parking spot, and I think I hit the car next to me because I turned too quickly, and I'm sure I speed to work. And the thing about it is my life is unmanageable because all of this stuff is happening because I can't say no to the drink, because I've crossed the line and alcohol is no longer a luxury for me. I need it. And I got to work, and these people depended on me to get them dressed and get them to the cafeteria to breakfast, and I let those people down because I didn't get there on time. And, you know, and this is just what kept happening with my drinking. And, you know, it got worse, obviously. It got much worse, and, you know, I was coming out of blackouts, and, you know, I still don't even know what happened. I walked out of a porta potty in a blackout. I'm not exactly sure what happened. And I always go to that night because then I blacked out at a party and these people said, no, it's fine. At some people's house, I don't even know where we were. And they were like, no, it's fine. The guys were like, leave her here. And thank God I had a God and I had people that said, no, we're going to take her with us, because who knows what would have happened. And they brought me with me, and they brought me and put me in the car. But I was so passed out. I was so blacked out. I don't even know what happened. And so the stakes are getting higher, and I'm living in an apartment with a guy. I don't really know his name. I think it was Glenn. I'm not exactly sure. And it's welfare housing, and there is nothing wrong with welfare housing, but a girl like me didn't need to be living there. I was only there because I couldn't get a job because I kept drinking instead of trying to find a job. And so I decided my best option was to say that I needed treatment. And I did it mainly because I wanted the attention, because I ran out of money and I didn't know what else to do. And I thought my mom and dad would feel bad for me and give me money and put me back on my feet and all would be okay. And so I went to treatment. And what I learned in treatment was, I guess they must have taken my blood, because they were like, your liver levels are like a 60-year-old man who drank every day. And I was a 23-year-old girl. And that's one of the biggest things that stayed with me at treatment. And I learned a lot. I'm sure I learned a lot about alcohol and alcoholism, and they brought us to a meeting downstairs on Friday, and then they bussed us out to a meeting, to the 8 a.m. meeting. But the thing is I never fully conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic, you know? And I just thought I was 23 and I was having fun. And I got out of treatment, and my mom stayed with me for a few weeks. And then I put my mom on the airplane and I went directly back to my friend's house and started to drink, because I didn't really admit that I was. I didn't believe that I was yet. And I had a few more of those debacles where I kept going out and trying to act like I wasn't an alcoholic, and I would go to the bar and be like, I just got out of treatment. Or I'd get drunk and I'd call the treatment and be like, I'm totally drunk. Like, I'm such a mess. Like, they really wanted to know that after all their hard work. And so what happened was I went out one night and nothing different happened, but I got sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I really just was like, what else can I do? You know, my life is not going anywhere. And so at that point, I was living with a woman in AA, and she became my sponsor. And so it's even more harder to drink when you're living with your sponsor in AA. And so, you know, I started to listen and started to take the suggestions that were given to me, right? I started to go to a meeting every day, and I got a service commitment, and that was to open the 6:30 a.m. meeting at this church. And I started to read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous word by word. And she used to talk about being in the guts of AA, being in the middle. And she would drag me to these roundups. I got sober in Missoula, Montana, and she'd bring me to these roundups. I'm like, oh, like I hated it. But I loved it, you know, because like I love being around new people now. Like you totally get me. I can tell you the craziest thing I'm thinking. And you're like, uh-huh, okay, yeah, I totally get it. Or you don't look at me like, oh my gosh, you're crazy. And that's what I started doing, and my life got better. And she said, in the morning, pray to your higher power or your God to keep you sober, and at the end of the night, thank your God for keeping you sober. And I had that obsession huge in my head to be like, how do I get rid of these AA people to go drink? And I can tell you the exact time, I remember the exact day when I looked at my girlfriend Beth, who's an AA, and I looked at her and I said, today I didn't think about drinking. And it was like a miracle. And that's when I knew that there must be some higher power greater than me. And so, you know, my life got better and I got a job and, you know, and I didn't take every suggestion that was given to me because I'm a strong-willed girl and I think I know what's best. And I started dating somebody really early in sobriety, a little over 90 days, and we started dating. And, you know, I thought that was just going to be like my cure. Like, this is it. This is going to be it. You know, God took away this obsession to drink, and now I, you know, I'm going to go off and live my life. But the thing is I stayed close and I went to meetings and I continued in my service and I continued to work these steps the best of my ability. And then we moved here, this boy and I moved here to New York City, and I went to the 79th Street workshop and someone told me to come to the Atlantic Group, and then my life started to change and I met these women. And one of them, I walked up to the piano and I was like, I don't have any friends. And she engulfed me and she introduced me to her friends and her sponsor. And before I knew it, I had this new sober family, and it was a miracle. It was like, it was amazing. So I got here in the Atlantic Group. Sorry, I'm like having a brain freeze. And I still remained, I think, so, sorry, you guys. So I'm coming to the Atlantic Group. My life is getting better, and I'm doing lots of service, and I'm going to lots of meetings. But the thing about it is I worked the steps, and I gave God the alcoholism. But I didn't give God my relationships. I didn't give God my work life. I didn't give God all of me. I gave him one little part. And what happened to me was my life kind of started to blow up around me. I was like the tornado in the big book. And he's like, the tornado happens and he comes out of the cellar and he's like, Ma, ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing? Like I would like tornado through your life and then spit you out and then go find somebody else. Like, and that's just kind of how I was. Like I hadn't really taken that third step and give God my life over to the care of God. I gave him the alcoholism. And the boy I came out here with, the marriage didn't work, and you know, and that was fine, and I got remarried, and I have we moved out to Chicago. And what started to happen was I wasn't going to as many meetings because I had kids. And I couldn't leave those kids at home without me. And that's really what I thought. And I slowly started going back to meetings. And I had one of those outer body experiences where I was talking to my cousin, and I was complaining about my life to my cousin. And my cousin, who I was complaining to, was going through a divorce, and her husband she was going through a divorce with had multiple sclerosis, and she had four young boys, and she was trying to figure out how she was going to raise these boys as a single mom. And I was complaining about my life. I had nothing to complain about, right? I had a healthy child. I was pregnant with my second child. My husband went to work. I got to stay home. I lived in this beautiful house, but I was miserable. I wasn't drinking, but I was miserable. I was dry. That hole was not filled up with God. You know, that hole was being filled up by, you know, before I was married, boys or food or, you know, whatever, my kids, whatever. And I was like so miserable. And when I was complaining to her, like I had that outer body experience, like, oh my gosh. And I was so sick of myself. Like I wanted to vomit. Like, how can you be like this? And I called my sponsor at the time, and I was like, I'm ready to rework these steps with you. You know, because it talks about in the big book the spiritual experience, and it talks about the like the burning bush, and that's definitely not what I had. I had that the educational variety where things happen, and I learn by experience. And someone said to me that, I swear she said 800 times, a spiritual person falls on their face 800 times a day, but I don't know if that's right. Maybe it was 300 times a day. But the thing about it is we pick ourselves up. We pick ourselves back up. And that's what I do. I make mistakes all the time, right? But I pick myself back up. And so I said to her, like, I am ready to rework these steps. And like a true miracle occurred. And we started from the first step and went through to the 12th step. And I finally got to that point where, you know, I took that third step and really gave my life over to the care of God. Because I didn't want to cause any wreckage. I didn't want to complain about this beautiful life I had. But it was all I knew. And I took that third step, and it was, like, amazing. And I felt the presence of God. And I heard the birds thing. And I got really crazy about birds. I was, like, bought a bird duvet cover. I bought a bird picture. My husband's like, what is going on with the birds? I was like, it's God. It's God. It's God. But it was like I was awakened. Like I heard the birds, you know. And I have to go back really quick because this is similar. When I was getting sober in Missoula, it's like this: you're in this valley and you're surrounded by the mountains. And I was newly sober, and these two guys were like, "Did you see the snow-capped mountains?" And they were talking. I'm like, "I didn't see them." And they're like, "Of course you didn't, because we're so involved with ourselves. Like I don't even hear birds singing. I'm so like Sue. I'm so selfish and self-centered when I don't have a God." And then we went on, and I'm so grateful I was had a sponsor who was willing to rework these steps with me, because I had a bigger God, and I was able to do a more thorough four-step and dig a little deeper and look a little harder and take more in about myself. And things came up, and we got to look at them, and we got to see where I was selfish and self-centered and inconsiderate and dishonest and fearful. And I'm telling you, those things are so important for me today, because when I go out in my daily life, sometimes I'll take the conversation over and I don't even mean to. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that was so rude. But like, if I don't do this work, I'm not going to see it. I'm just going to like bulldoze past you. And then we did 6 and 7, and you know, and I get to see where those character defects are, and now I get to see when they show up in my life. And I got to get to 8 and 9, and what a beautiful experience to go back in sobriety, because I was like a tornado. And some of that time I was a tornado here when I was going to this meeting, and I got to come back and make amends to people. And it was really amazing, because I feel like the amend is to change our behavior. So if I'm making amends to you, then I have to change the way I am with you. So then I get to change and be a different friend. I get to change and be a different wife. I get to change and be a different daughter. And it was really amazing. Like I talk about one of the most amazing amends is I met my ex-husband in Midtown, and we just got to talk. And it's like, who does that, right? Like, who's like, I'm going to meet my, you know, like, people in AA do that, right? We go and say, man, I was so inconsiderate. I was like the worst wife ever. You know what I mean? And like, and then the thing is I get to change and be different today, you know? And, you know, and what a beautiful process. And so today my life is like totally different. I like I said, we moved out here, and I have this like family that's beyond my wildest. I have this life that's beyond my wildest dreams. And sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, like how did this happen? Like how is God entrusting me with these three little people, you know, and my husband? And it's like truly amazing. I am not perfect. I am not perfect by any stretch of the means. But I try to do the same things I did when I got sober. And when I moved here, I made sure to find my meetings. I made sure to do somewhat of service, and hopefully I get to find people to speak at this Friday meeting. And I still have a sponsor, and I still check in with her, and I have a morning routine. And I do a nightly inventory, and my girl Stephanie that's here, we share our nightly inventories with each other, and it keeps me accountable. And, you know, I try and pray and do my readings so I can show up and be the wife and the mom and the sponsor. I sponsor this girl, and she is just like me. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I can't even believe it. She says things, and I'm like, I know. Do it this way. Don't do it that way, please. But, you know... and it's like amazing life. And sometimes it's going so good. I'm like, these thoughts come in. I'm like, I'm going to die. Like something horrible is going to happen to you. It's like, oh my gosh, just enjoy it. And, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to speak. And I love you all. Bye.